Blog Talk Radio.
Turnbuckle fans, welcome to the show here on another Sunday afternoon. Sign Guy and QT with you as usual. One note I want to make known at the start here. Recent guest we had on Hockey Day, Stuart Kemp, has set up a GoFundMe fundraiser. He is raising some funds to try to offset some of his medical costs that he incurred recently due to a very lengthy hospital stay. You can find all that information on Stuart's social media, so look up Stuart Kemp, and if you have a few dollars to spare, I'm sure he would appreciate every cent he can get. Most people know how expensive long hospital stays can be. He also has a brand new t-shirt that will be available on Pro Wrestling Tees soon. More information on that once it's all good to go. But our guest has joined us today, someone I have very, very much wanted to have on this show for a long time. Gorgeous Michelle Starr, welcome to Turnbuckle Turmoil. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. We'll finally get to talk to you on Turnbuckle Turmoil, for sure.
Absolutely. A pleasure is definitely ours. Now, as you might be familiar, our traditional first-timer question is something we use when people come on here the first time. What led to you getting into the pro wrestling industry?
Wow, that's a question that goes back many years. As you know, I'm a pretty old guy. I'm 52 years old. You know, I started watching wrestling in Southern California and Los Angeles in the 1980s, early 80s. I was I believe 14 or 15 when I first discovered it. And then I, you know, on television, me and my buddies, we would, you know, we'd wrestle in the front yard and, you know, not backyard wrestling. We had a front yard down the street, wrestled in backyard. We actually did some boxing matches. So we used to box each other in the front yard. And I discovered the independent wrestling scene at my high school. I was a freshman in high school in Manhattan Beach, California. And the local wrestling scene, California Wrestling, run by Carl Lauer, came to my school. And that was my first introduction to the local wrestling, where I discovered guys like Billy Anderson, my trainer, Pistol Pete, Budokan, Wildman Jack Armstrong, Chief J. Strombo Jr. I found out there was a whole world of independent wrestling, because by the time I started following wrestling, getting in wrestling, the only wrestling on TV was the WWF. And besides that, the old Mike LaBelle territory days at the Olympic Auditorium were gone. That ended, and LaBelle was, you know, working with WWF and bringing their shows to town and stuff at this point. And so, yeah, I discovered independent wrestling, which led to lots of crazy world for me, for sure, crazy ride. That's how it all started, yeah.
Now, your career, like you said, has spanned quite a number of years. When you were starting out, you sort of had a little bit different journey than a lot of people did. You broke in doing a lot of side jobs, setting up the ring and working in the promotion sides of things, underneath the promoter, doing jobs for the actual office of some of the promotions. When you were doing all of this, when you first started, did that plant the seed for you to eventually start your own wrestling promotion and get into that aspect of it, or did that come later in your career?
You know, I've always had wanted to be a promoter for sure, but like it all started out with, you know, like I said, setting up the ring. I got a job with the WWF, and it was me and my trainer, Billy Anderson, we were going to, we're doing LA every month, San Diego, Fresno, Bakersfield, all the West Coast towns, Southern California towns. We would go up north to Frisco sometimes when the other ring had to go somewhere else. I was the timekeeper. I was the jacket guy. I even ring announced on a couple of occasions when the ring announcer wasn't available, the regular guy. And, you know, I actually got a job that time period, right around the time period. I was actually started out as an assistant for Red Bastien. Red Bastien was the agent for the WWF on the West Coast at that time period. And he had an office in the Anaheim Convention Center because the WWF ran there on a semi-regular basis in Anaheim. And he had a small office there. And I would go there and I would, take calls. I would answer messages, give him his messages. I would do banking for him. I would I make the pass list for the shows. Like, so let's say the WWF was giving a sports arena that month in LA, I would have to make the guest list, like who could get in for free and who doesn't get in for free, who's on the list, you know, and who shouldn't be on the list, and so on. So I had that charge of all the towns for San Diego, LA, Bakersfield, Fresno, all those towns I was making the guest list and stuff like that. I would see checks, for different wrestlers who went to Japan. Like Red was booking guys in Japan and he would get a booking fee. And I would take that check and I'd go deposit it in the bank for him. It was pretty, pretty cool, awakening to see how wrestling worked, especially to that side, like being 16 years old or 17, maybe at this time and working for Red Bastien in his office was pretty cool of him to do to actually like introduce me into the business that way for sure. Definitely an eye opening experience.
You mentioned being trained by Phil Anderson. He is something of a jack of all trades within wrestling. He's wrestled, he's done the ring crew, he's ring announced for several national companies. He works with the CAC, writes books. You've been on sort of a similar path. You've done a laundry list of work within pro wrestling. Do you think that all stems from having Bill Anderson as a trainer and seeing how he has branched out to all these different aspects of the business, or did that come from somewhere else within your career?
No, I think he has definitely a big involvement in my career for sure. Like he inspiration, the stuff he does. I see what he does, and when you're a wrestler, you can't be a wrestler forever. Your body can only wrestle for so long, and take for so long. And once you get to a certain age, you get to the point where, am I really giving the fans the show that I used to be able to give them? Am I cheating the fans? Am I cheating myself? I'm not taking the same bumps anymore. I'm not doing the same crazy stuff I did anymore because you can't. And so you got to move on. You got to pivot to something else. Whether it be myself, I was promoting shows at the same time. Whether it was like Bill, he did ring announcing, he did everything else. It all depends, it comes down to making a buck too, right? Sometimes you got to pivot to make the money, or you move into more of a guy who not only you're the ring announcer, maybe you're organizing the tour, maybe you're doing a lot of the work for the tour, maybe you're arranging the flights, maybe you're booking hotels, maybe you're doing the transportation. There's a lot of things guys are doing and behind the scenes, and then their job at the actual show, maybe he's the ring announcer too that night. Maybe he's wrestling, maybe he's pulling the ring and doing this other stuff, right? Maybe the guy pulling the ring is actually the referee later in the show, right? I mean, there's so many different aspects involved in wrestling, and I think a lot of things open up today, with social media and stuff. There's different social media jobs available and stuff like that. And wrestling, even though there's no live events really that many much happening at the moment, but there seems to be a lot of opportunity right now in wrestling for sure. But you just got to be able to make yourself versatile, right? Explore your opportunities, get yourself out there,
I definitely agree with you 100%. One of the places that has exploded in the last few years as far as mainstream U.S. availability and fan reaction is Japan, with the advent of New Japan World, and just before the pandemic they were starting the tour on their own in the United States and into Mexico. What do you think it is that has started to attract the mainstream wrestling audience to the Japanese product?
I'm not sure if it's a mainstream wrestling audience or if it's more of a certain specific wrestling audience. There's a I mean, the products are, because of the internet, you know, you could watch New Japan on TV on your, you can subscribe to New Japan, similar, you can subscribe to the WWE Network. You know, you could follow it, and it's a different style, much more hard-hitting, and more, you know, and I think that has a lot of fans like that, and I think it's they, you know, when New Japan was touring, I know they weren't doing great numbers. They were doing, you know, 1,700, maybe a couple thousand people in different places they were going. I mean, it wasn't earth-shattering, but they were able to do better than independent promotion for sure. New Japan has locked up a lot of the top independent guys that are out there. I mean, there was a couple of guys in Washington State, I believe they locked up. They got the Clark Connors and his name Jet Knight, maybe. I think that's his name. I think his name's something else though in New Japan, but something Knight. But yeah, I mean, they and I think once COVID is over, they will. I mean, they'll definitely do more. I know they're doing their tapings, and they do tapings in Southern California there, where I think David Marquez produces their TV, possibly. I'm not 100% sure on that, but yeah, I mean, I think New Japan's kind of taken over what Ring of Honor's may have lost. I think Ring of Honor had that kind of fan base before, and maybe New Japan kind of took some of that fan base away, you know, from Ring of Honor, possibly. We'll see. I mean, I'll see how much TV penetration they get in the U.S. I mean, they go to a big market like New York City when they ran that big show in New York during, they run Madison Square Garden. I think they had a huge turnout there, but that's, you know, New York, it's a melting pot of people. I mean, I don't know if they're going to draw the same kind of crowd in, you know, Montana or something like that, or Idaho, but, you know, if they go to a major market that has a Japanese population like Los Angeles or San Francisco or New York, I think they'll do quite well.
One of the other places that you have ventured to in your career, I believe it's possibly the only show we have worked together on, was up in Alaska, and things seem to be going fairly well up in Alaska. They have some big shows lined up with a lot of nationally known names coming in, and they're going to be interspersed with the local Alaskan independent scene. What do you think of the strides that they have made up there in Alaska for pro wrestling?
You know, I think Alaska is the last frontier, like they call it. You know, that's the place where it's kind of virtually untapped. I mean, there's a lot of potential in Alaska. I mean, not many events go there on a regular basis. I think right now with COVID, though, it's hard to make events succeed. I think the promoter running shows right now, and I think the promoter is actually a wrestler who's running these events up there. But he's bringing lots of talent in, and I wish him his best. I think COVID's probably hurting him a bit. Attendance wise, but I think once COVID is over, he will do great. I mean, running, you know, Anchorage and Fairbanks and Wasilla and the other towns he's going to there. I think he actually intermingles with some shoot fighting stuff too, some UFC type fighting things too. I think he's going to be doing great business. I mean, I think that place is hungry for wrestling, hungry for that type of entertainment. I think it's a perfect area for it. It's just the problem getting the guys there. And that's the, you know, it's so far to go for people who are not on the West Coast. Like guys out of the West Coast here in the Northwest, we could get there easily. But, you know, a lot of talent come from the East Coast. It's a little bit harder. But I think if they could put a string of shows together, you know, go run a weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday maybe, and bring talent in. And I think they could do some definitely do some good numbers there for sure.
Now, up in your neck of the woods there in British Columbia, in the last few years, I know you've been putting on some all-female shows, and those have become more and more popular over the past five. You see a lot more all-female shows than you did in previous years, except for all-female promotions like Shimmer or Glow, which were pretty much the exception rather than the rule at that point. What was your take on the rise of all-female shows, and when did you decide that you were going to look into starting to run some of those?
Well, you know, I always felt that female wrestlers were underused and very talented. I mean, there's a lot of female wrestlers out there, and they weren't getting their fair shake. You know, they were kind of always playing second fiddle to the guys, and they were you know, using them on cards, maybe second match, third, fourth match. But they weren't getting the main event level. But then female wrestling kind of changed. You can see with Impact, they had the knockouts. They kind of like their marquee was female wrestling. And even WWE now, their top programs now are female wrestling, Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair. But, so I thought, you know, let's do Girls Gone Wrestling. I got the Girls Gone Wrestling name, and I thought it, you know, kind of like a spin on Girls Gone Wild, but we weren't promoting that type of wrestling. We were promoting serious wrestling with good talent. You know, we were bringing in Thunder Rosa, and we were bringing Leia Hosaka in. Plus, we had Nicole Matthews here and a bunch of others, you know. And we were trying to focus on good wrestling, good storylines, and we were doing the girls shows about, you know, once every 2 or 3 months, because and we tried to do them back-to-back, tried to do 2 days we could and do tapings and stuff like that. But the problem with the girls show is our regular fans, our regular all-star fans, which were many. We were doing good in Cloverdale with all-star. They weren't supporting the girls shows. If we ran a guy show and we had 300 or 400 at a guy show 1 week, we were coming back with all girls to 2 weeks later or the next month, it would go down to 150 people. Like, it was, the fans did not support the girls' product. We even started putting a couple of guys' matches on the girls' shows to get some of the fans back, which would help a little bit. But still, the fans, I don't know why, they just didn't want to support the girls' product. So the girls' product's always been a tough thing for me. I mean, I really love it. I want to make it work. But it's also because there's less girls available. You have to fly a lot of girls in, so it makes it more costly to promote a girls show. But the attendance is lower, so it's kind of like unless you're selling the footage online to a site that's going to pay you for the matches, you know, like that. It's really hard to make a go of the girls wrestling. You know, I mean, it's on the back burner right now. I mean, all wrestling up here is on the back burner, but you know, something we definitely like to do again in the future, hopefully. You know, if it comes about. And
hopefully that catches on for you a little bit more once things get going with live shows once again.
Yeah, definitely. And as for girls wrestling, you know, I know a lot of girls do customs matches and things like that, and a lot of promoters promote customs. You know, and I'm not into promoting customs or that side of wrestling. I'm more of making the girls wrestling into an actual league, an actual promotion that has storylines and angles and legitimacy. You know, and you know, and customs aren't my thing up here for sure. I just wanted to get that out there too. So.
Now, another thing that you are involved in is something that definitely has been affected by the COVID pandemic, that being the Cauliflower Alley Club. I know you go down to Las Vegas and take part in the CAC. During normal times, they canceled last year, and it is postponed to the fall this year. Obviously, things will look a little bit different once CAC is back in swing. What has it been like for you over the years as a CAC member? Have you seen a lot of changes within the organization, or is it something that is fairly stable during normal times?
Well, you know, like in every organization or promotion or event, there's always changes over the years. I mean, I've been going to CAC, I think, since like 2005. You know, back then there was guys like Red Bastien was the guy in charge, you know, and then Carl Lauer and stuff was always been the executive vice president. And after Red moved on and sadly passed away, there was Nick Bockwinkel, right? And, you know, the old guard and stuff like that. And when Nick stepped down, there was Brian Blair. And then Carl Lauer stepped down and, you know, Morgan Dollar was involved for a long time, and I think just always change over for sure. I mean, as an event grows, there's gonna be change over, and not everybody's gonna get along with everybody. I hear there's infighting tonight in the CAC with people. They don't like this guy or they don't like that guy. But you know what? That's like in any wrestling promotion. Like, I could go into any locker room and find some guy I don't like. The same thing. I'm sure they could find it. Some guy could find me to the same way. But I mean, I love CAC. I love going to it. I think now it's you know, most recent ones, it got bigger than ever. They had some really big name stars there, and they might have they might have forgot about the smaller guys that helped make the CAC in the past a bit. You know, they might have, but I think that's just part of the growing pains of the operation. I mean, the Benevolent Fund has helped a lot of wrestlers in need who needed to get medical treatment and couldn't pay for, or maybe they were losing their house, needed a mortgage payment made, or so on. You know, I mean, it's definitely a good cause, and it's a great time. I love going there. I bring a whole group of guys from Canada down with me. Usually we're about 10 strong at least, and we go down there and we have a great time, and we love mingling people. We love going to Fremont Street. We love going to hang on the bars. We love seeing all the displays and the memorabilia room. We love talking to all the old timers. We love reminiscing people we haven't seen since the last year. I mean, I love the CAC, and I'm looking forward to it happening again. The sad thing is for us people who are living here in Canada, is Canada's got some very strict rules right now on the border. If we cross the border, when we return, we have to have a negative COVID test to return. Plus, we get an automatic 2-week quarantine by land. If we're flying back in the country, we have to get the negative COVID test. Plus, we get an automatic 3-day hotel stay at a cost of $2,000 in a government-appointed hotel per person. We got to take a test there. And once we provide a negative test, we're allowed to go back to our home. If we test positive, we have to go to like a quarantine facility to stay for the rest of the 2 weeks. So it's quite challenging to travel right now from Canada. I mean, the border is so strict. You know, you're automatically going to be off work from your shoot job for 2 weeks afterwards because you've got to quarantine. And it could be costly. It could be, like I said, $2,000 extra dollars to quarantine, the way the rules are in Canada right now. I mean, so it makes it tough. That's why there's virtually no travel going on from Canada at the moment, or in and out. It's just, the rules are so strict right now. As for CAC, like, you won't see any Canadians there in Vancouver until the federal government lifts that $2,000 quarantine ban and even the 2-week quarantine. I mean, I guess if you're retired, if you go home and you're retired, you could go home for 2 weeks in quarantine. That's okay, but that to miss work and so that's a whole different ball game. And Canada's way behind in the vaccinations compared to the United States. The United States will have everybody vaccinated by May 1st, they're claiming. Where in Canada here, like in British Columbia, where I live, there, a guy my age is 52, won't get vaccinated until August or September. Now, I could cross the line and get vaccinated because I'm an American citizen, but then I have to quarantine for 2 weeks, too, on my return. So, did I cross the line and get vaccinated, or did I just wait it out till the fall, I guess, get it up here or in the summer, I guess. So, yeah. So, I don't see myself at CAC this year unless the rules change drastically in the next couple months here.
Hopefully they get things changed and you'll be able to make it. But, yeah, definitely I'm sure the CAC is going to miss a lot of people this year due to the restrictions that will still be in place. Now, when you have gone to the CAC in the past several years, do you take part in the annual cribbage tournament that they have?
You know, I don't. You know, actually, I've never played cribbage. You know, I've watched a lot of guys play cribbage, but I have never played cribbage. In all the years I've been around it, I have never. It's something that's never interests me. So I should learn to play, and I should be like one of those old guys that sit there and play cribbage. You know, and you know that'd be pretty cool. I mean, I missed a lot of opportunities. It would have been really cool to play cribbage against a guy like the Destroyer or something like that. You know, when he was still here with us. You know, but I missed those opportunities. And I guess, do you play cribbage? Do you play?
I play a little bit. It's been a long while since I have played, but I did try to learn the game just in case it was available in locker rooms.
Yeah, I think cribbage is a game that was, you know, there was no cell phones back in the day, right? So, like, people would play cribbage, play cards, you know, like they, but nowadays everybody's on their cell phone. They're sitting in their own little part of the dress room and they're surfing Twitter, you know, so like no one, I think it's something that doesn't exist in today's business. And if they're playing a game, they're playing a handheld Nintendo Switch or something like that, you know, nowadays, and they're playing those type of handheld games. I just think the days of playing cribbage are something that's probably just about gone. I haven't seen any locker rooms in a long, long time myself.
I think I've seen maybe one game in all my years, and that one kind of took me by surprise, so I think it's kind of a dying art, but who knows what the future will bring, I guess. Now, since you have been around for quite a while, I know you've seen a lot of changes within the wrestling industry. What would you say are some of the things that have changed the most? Like, what traditions do you think either are now gone or are now part of the business that are major parts, or maybe the style of things that are done or on the business end? Just kind of what in general do you see is some of the bigger changes since you started?
Well, kayfabe, for one, that's gone for sure. I mean, back in the days, you know, you'd ride to the town, and, you know, if you're a heel riding the babyface, you know, the whoever was driving would drop the other guy off around the corner from the building and stuff like that, and you'd have to walk in yourself, that thing, and, you know, you would never be seen around, you know, your opponent anywhere afterwards. Either you know, you had to go to a sponsor afterwards, you would sit apart, you know, or sit at a different table or something like that. That's now everybody's just, you know, hugging on each other and kissing each other and hanging out with each other. They don't care anymore, just taking photos of each other. It's all online. It's all in the open. So definitely the art of kayfabe is definitely gone. And I understand people know it's a show, but when you go, like when I go to watch a movie, I'm able to suspend disbelief and I can actually get into the movie and watch it. And same thing with wrestling. If I watch a show, like a match, I can suspend disbelief and I could actually, if the heel's doing this job as a heel, you know that's the guy that's the bad guy. And the babyface doing his job, you know that's a good guy. And you can suspend this. But if you see them hanging around each other before the match or after the match, it kind of, the whole illusion, the whole show is kind of like spoiled. So I definitely think kayfabe is definitely one. Another tradition that's gone is the speaking carny. We used to have our own language, you know, the carny, which is derived from the carnivals, and I bet you there's not a guy in the dress room in most places you go to who can speak it now, at all, you know, whether it's a couple words or a fluent sentence. And it was something that was dying off when I was starting out, you know, and I don't speak it very often. I might speak a little bit here and there, but, you know, it's never used, so it's never practiced. So you get out of practice, and I think that's definitely something that's gone. Also, another thing gone is the dressing room privacy. You know, like nowadays, there's every Tom, Dick, and Harry's running, coming in and out of the dressing room. Back in the day, you had to knock. You had to ask for permission. You know, the only guys in the back were the referees and the wrestlers. And, you know, it wasn't guys bringing their buddies in or this and that and so on. And it was kind of like a sacred area, you know, like you got your chance to get to the dressing room when you're starting out, or, you know, it was great. It was something that was special, but now it's just like free run of everything. So as we got to wrestling in the ring, I mean, I think the wrestling ring is amazing. I think the wrestlers today are better than the wrestlers of yesteryear, for sure. Talent-wise and ability-wise and skill-wise, they're definitely better. But I think the guys of yesteryear, they were they got more out of the fans by doing less. Doing less is actually giving them more. You know, they were able to tell better stories. They grab a hold. You know, hey, I just saw something online yesterday. I said, I mean, when's the last match you saw on national TV that actually started out with chain wrestling? You know, at the start, they actually did some wrestling at the start before they actually went in their walked into a super kick or something like that, or flew out the top rope or, you know, out of the ring. I mean, just chain wrestling's gone. You know, good tag team wrestling's gone. Psychology's gone. Like I mean, I love some parts of AEW. I love, you know, I thought the angle with Jericho was strong at the end last week on Wednesday, but I thought the rest of the show was garbage. I mean, it's hard to follow. It's guys getting super kicked and nipping back up from it, you know, and stuff like that. They're not even selling it. You know, it's the art of selling. That's definitely, guys don't sell anymore. They don't want to sell. They want to look weak. They some matches could have 10 finishes in them. They could have, you know. So I watched a match actually. I watched a match tonight. A match had multiple finishes in it, but I think the finish at the very end was the old school small package or something like that, which was cool. But there was 10 more devastating moves before that. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I definitely understand where you're coming from. And if it helps you out ever, I speak Kizarni fluently, tizel tizot.
That's That's awesome. You speak Carney that good. That's good. Fluently. That's great. Awesome, man. Very good, man. You must be one of the only few guys that do that, though. You must maybe because you travel to the central United States a bit, so probably down into Tennessee and Arkansas or in those places. They probably do it down there, actually.
It's honestly about the same anywhere you go. If you run into guys that were trained, say, 97-ish on backwards, there's a chance they'll speak it. If not, then usually not.
Right.
Well, we've hit the point in the show where we have a game we like to play. We call it Word Association. I'll throw out the names of some people that you have come across in your career, and the first word or two that pops to your mind is the answer. Are you prepared to play around a word association?
Well, you know, I've taken a lot of chair shots in my life, so we'll see how my word association. I might not even remember these guys. We'll see how it goes here.
All right, here we go. Bambi Hall.
Bambi Hall?
Yes.
Did you say Bambi Hall?
Yes.
Oh, sweet. Cute as a doe, tough as a buck, you know, definitely.
Bill Anderson.
Bill Anderson, legend of my mind, trainer, mentor, person I look up to.
Ayafula Dabashi.
Trump supporter, nut, crazy, lunatic, conspiracy theorist. But he's a good guy. He's a good guy.
Mike Santiago.
Mike, oh, he's a heat magnet. That guy is likes to stir it up. Definitely a good worker, though. Good worker in the ring, but he loves to light fires for sure. And he loves collecting minor league baseball hats.
Al Tomko,
one of the guys gave me my start appearing in Vancouver. A good guy, good heart. The last guy up here to run full time territory 6 days a week, and have weekly television. The time period. Yeah, good guy.
Casey Carlisle.
Who's that? Casey Carlisle?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, she's a nice young lady. Yeah, she worked up here for us a few times. Yeah, definitely a good person. Pleasant, pleasure to be around, for sure. Bass Nevada, definitely the heart and soul of local wrestling up here. True historian who keeps in great records of the business. He loves the business, and one of my best friends in the wrestling business. In and out of the business, one of my best friends.
C.W. Bergstrom.
Wow, C.W. Bergstrom. Haven't heard of him in a long time. I haven't had contact him in a long time. Big man, giant of man, a great guy to work with in the ring, easy to work with in the ring, good sense of humor. We had a match in a baseball stadium in Oregon years ago. It was in the pouring rain. We were slipping and sliding on all over the place. It was funny. It was fun. Nobody got hurt. Yeah, CW's a good guy.
Bad Blood.
You know, Bad Blood is a young kid. I met him in Compton, California, at a lucha show. So I've known him since my start, actually, or since his start. I was wrestling before him, and good guy. He tries to travel, makes a goal of wrestling. You know, has a podcast too. I did his podcast a few months ago. Nothing bad to say about Bad Blood.
Last name, Jinder Mahal.
Jinder Mahal, former WWE World Champion, awesome man, good friend. You know, he would come in and work for us. He wouldn't charge us for the work here. He stayed with it. He's just like none of the normal guys. He would come to the wrestling school that was going on at that time and train with the guys. He would travel with us. No matter, he'd ask for any special privileges or any special needs. You know, he's good. Good guy. Good all-around guy. I hope he gets back in the ring and shows him how good he is, for sure.
I know he has questions also, so I'm going to pass things over to him.
Okay, QT.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Sign Guy. Hello, Mr. Star.
Hey, how are you doing? So your name is QT?
QT. It stands for Quite Terrific.
Oh, Quite Terrific. Okay, got it.
Yes. Okay. Well, Mr. Star, I saw your YouTube video entitled All-Star Wrestling Behind the Curtain, Michelle Star Discovers Pro Wrestling. And in that video, you mentioned you went to MiraCosta High School. Is that located at 1401 Arista Boulevard, Manhattan Beach, California?
It is in Manhattan Beach, California, on Aviation Boulevard, I believe. Not Aviation, sorry, Let me think here.
All right. Now, isn't your mascot the Mustangs?
Mustangs, that's right,
And your school colors are green and gold?
That's correct, yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm going to mark that down in our logbook. We sometimes ask our interviewees what their high school mascot was and what their high school colors were.
But I went to two high schools. I only went to that high school during my freshman year. And then my next 3 years, I went to Rolling Hills High School, which is on the Rolling Hills Titans. Yeah.
Oh, all right. What city is Rolling Hills High School in?
Sorry about that. What was that?
What city is Rolling Hills High School in?
Rolling Hills, actually. Rolling Hills Estates, California. It's actually called Peninsula High School now. They changed the name. It's called Peninsula High School now.
Oh, okay. Peninsula, okay. Now, did you ever, in your career, did you ever have a chance to wrestle at Alameda High School in the Bay Area, Alameda High?
I did work in the Bay Area for the guy who passed away. What's his name slipped my mind, Roland Alexander. So I know we did do some high school shows. I might have worked at Alameda High School. I'm not sure.
Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Star, in that video, All-Star Wrestling Behind the Curtain, you mentioned a man named Carl Lawler. Is he in any relationship to Jerry Lawler?
No, it's Lauer, L-A-U-E-R. He's a promoter who was based in California. Now he lives in Missouri. He was also the vice president of the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Yes, is he still vice president of the Cauliflower Alley Club?
I think he's still involved. I'm not sure if he's the executive vice president still or not. But
okay.
Involved.
Well, Mr. Starr, while still in high school, and you did mention this to Sign Guy, you started doing newsletters and interviews of local events. Did you ever have any interviews with wrestlers in those early days when the wrestlers may have been in a bad mood because they had just lost that day or the day before?
I don't know. I think I was treated pretty well by those guys. I mean, nobody really got mad at me too much. I think I wrote an article once where Pistol Pete and Budokan might have been mad because I didn't portray them how they wanted to be in the article, possibly. I was still learning. I didn't know how the business worked back then or behind the scenes. I might have said something publicly that they thought it should have been said, and they just gave me a little lecture about it, and that was it. Nothing really serious. I mean, I think the only guy I had issues with ever newsletter time based was Mondo Guerrero. But me and Mondo became friends later. I actually ended up working Mondo quite a bit in Tijuana for some shows down there, some lucha shows. So, and then we see each other every year at CAC. So, I mean, I think, as anything, when you're a young kid and you're getting involved in a world of wrestling, you don't know a lot about, and you don't know what a lot of these guys went in the past at that time period, you're going to make mistakes and you're going to ruffle a few feathers and it's going to happen, but you grow from that, you learn from that, and you correct those things and you move on and keep going.
Yeah, I mean, how mad could they get at a young high school kid starting out?
That's right.
That's pretty basic knowledge. Yes.
I remember there was one time, though, I was writing my newsletter, and it was a promotion called California Championship Wrestling run by Barry Richards. They actually had TV. They were on KDOZ Channel 56. Barry didn't like how I covered his promotion, I guess, in my newsletter. And Barry actually, I think, banned me from his events for a time period of time. He was very hostile towards me. He didn't like me whatsoever. I was a 16-year-old kid, and Barry Richards ran California, that TV show, but he did not like me at all. So that's a funny story from back in the day.
Now, did the news travel that you had been banned from a wrestling organization, and did that gain you a little bit of notoriety in the high school halls?
No, and you know, following wrestling back then when I was in high school was kind of like a, you know, you're a weird kid, you know, you're following wrestling. Wrestling wasn't cool back then to follow, you know, in high school, you know, especially in the school I was going to at that point, you know, up on the in Rolling Hills there. They, you know, wasn't really a thing, you know, like, yeah, I did a newsletter, and I was also traveling because I was, like, doing the ring crew, and I missed a lot of school to do overnight shows at WWF, you know, to do the ring and stuff. And yeah, it was definitely not something that was popular back then for sure.
Well, now in those days, back in the early 80s, the territories were starting to die out. They were dying out, but the wrestlers still traveled quite a bit. Did you ever have a chance to interview Billy Jack Haynes and Rip Oliver?
No, I did not, but I've been around Billy Jack quite a bit over my life. I saw Billy, you know, when I started working on WWF and traveling with them, I kind of stopped the newsletter, right? I was giving the guys a newsletter for a while, like the agents and stuff like that, and eventually I stopped doing the newsletter just to, because it was kind of like conflict of interest a bit, you know, so I just kind of, then I had my job at WWF, which was doing okay. So I would see guys like Billy Jack, different talents, and I mean, I remember one time where I was, I think I might have been in Fresno or one of those places, Outback Jack was giving me grief about something, and Billy Jack stood up for me and says, "Hey, you leave him alone. He's my friend," you know, type thing. And from then on, Billy Jack was always an awesome guy to me. Like another time, I was in another dressing room. Steve Offey just joined WWF, and I walked in the dressing room. Steve Offey didn't know who I was. I walked in. Well, what's he doing here? You know, like get out of here. And Billy Jack again says, "No, no, he's with us. He works for us. You know, leave him alone," type thing, right? So like Billy Jack's always been a cool dude to me. We went to Art Barr's funeral together. When we sat with each other at that funeral and stuff, so when Art Barr passed away, Beetlejuice. And I love Billy Jack. I haven't seen him in a long time. I haven't talked to him in a long time, but it'd be good to see him again someday.
Beetlejuice was a good character. I liked him. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, Mr. Starr, early in your after a couple months in your career, the wrestlers started to trust you, and in a pivotal moment in your young life occurred when Jimmy Snuka ripped your shirt off. Can you tell our Turnbuckle fans about this shirt ripping incident?
You know, that's actually a California Championship wrestling. That's before they hated me. Before I was banned, I was doing a jacket. That's at Fender's Ballroom, I believe, in Long Beach. My trainer Billy, we were doing a ring crew at that time period too, I guess. He had Jimmy. He convinced Jimmy to do that, I guess, right? So Jimmy, yeah, it was kind of weird to happen. You know, I didn't know what was happening. You know, and it's kind of cool. I went on to wrestle Jimmy many times over the years after that when I became a wrestler and had him on many of my shows up here in Canada. So Jimmy was always a good guy to me for sure.
Now, if this was on YouTube today, Jimmy Snuka ripping your shirt, how many hits do you think it would have viewer-wise?
Well, I think it is on YouTube somewhere. I think you can find it, but I don't know. I mean,
oh,
yeah, it is on there somewhere. I've seen it recently. Yeah.
Oh my gosh! I'll have to look that up and do some research. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, Mr. Starr, you said in the early years one of the people who set up the rings with you was Scott Peterson. Did you have a chance to wrestle him early in your career, Scott?
No. So Scott Peterson—that's actually how I got the ring crew job at Starr. Yeah. So. Daryl Peterson and Scott Peterson. Daryl Peterson was Matt's pain. They were doing the ring gear, and they were living in Lomita, California. And somehow I became acquainted to them somehow. But Daryl had to go. He was either going to New Japan to train, or he was going to AWA. I can't remember what it was at that point. But I started doing the ring of Scott That's right. And then Scott, soon after I started in the ring, he left to wrestle in for Don Owens in Portland. So then it was just me, and I was just a kid then. I remember the first time I set the ring was in Anaheim, the convention center, and for Red, for Dead of Death back then. And then that's how I kind of got in to that point, because Scott was gone, Daryl Peterson was gone, and but I never got to wrestle Scott. Scott was on his way to Oregon for Don Owens.
Okay. Now, speaking of Don Owens and all the Portland wrestlers, did you ever have a chance to meet a man named Kevin Vaughn who wrestled under the name Lance Von Erich?
No, I've never met him.
Okay. Because he briefly was a roommate of Billy Jack Haynes in Portland.
Okay.
His roommate.
Never met
him. Okay. Okay. Well, Mr. Starr, when you were getting started in wrestling in the Bay, in the California area, and you had a chance to look at be in the Los Angeles area, had you seen the first acceptance of mainstream women's wrestlers? They were probably much more established in the California area than the Pacific Northwest. Do you think that's the right assessment?
So you're saying mainstream wrestlers, female wrestlers were in California more than the Northwest, you're saying? I mean, there were some
Yes, they had a larger pool of women talent to draw on, if I'm correct.
They did, but not a great amount of talent. I mean, all the independent shows I saw in Southern California, they were always the same girls, Charlie the Golden Cat and Debbie the Killer Tomato. those two are not many others, Pepper LaBianco. There wasn't a lot of, there was some lucha girls, I can't remember their names, but there wasn't a lot of female wrestling then, no.
Okay, can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil fans who the first women you got into the ring with, and who was the first lady to give you a body slam?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know. I have no idea the first girl. Iron Maiden. Sorry, Iron Maiden. Iron Maiden was the first girl.
Ooh, Iron Maiden.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Holy.
Yeah, she.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, Mr. Starr, this past Friday we had on a wrestler from Atlanta, Georgia, and I asked him a question about Peach Cobbler. Did you ever wrestle in Atlanta, Georgia? And after your match, did you yourself have Peach Cobbler?
No, I have not. No.
Oh, okay. When was the first time you came up to the Pacific Northwest and had our famous apple pie?
These are very strange questions. I came to the Pacific Northwest in 1988. And as for apple pie, I think I had apple pie before I came to the Pacific Northwest. After Pacific Northwest apple pie, I'm not sure. It's not one of my things I usually order on the menu. So I don't really have an answer for you.
Oh, okay. No problem. All right. Well, Mr. Starr, I also saw your YouTube video entitled WCCW Michelle Starr Beauty Makeover.
Jeez.
And if you freeze the video, I got a kick out of that. If you freeze the video at the 1:56 mark, you can see the date September 28th, 1991. Does that seem like 29 years and almost exactly 1/2 year ago to you?
Yeah. It's time has flown by so quickly. I mean, when you're young, you think time's going to last forever, but as you get older, time just moves so much more faster. It was definitely, we were trying to do some different things back then in 1991, for sure, trying to do a makeover type thing. But at a beauty salon with actually real customers still in the salon, which was kind of cool. that's a long time ago. It's a lifetime ago, for sure.
Have you been back to that strip mall?
Yeah, I've hung many posters in that mall over the years for different shows. I've never gone back to the actual salon to, get anything done there. But I didn't know that. I don't think that salon's there anymore, actually.
I wonder if it is, if they still have an autographed picture of you on the wall, or did they ever? Did you ever find that out?
No, I never found it out. I'm pretty sure it's not there anymore, but...
Okay. Well, in that video, I particularly enjoyed the 3-minute and 90-second mark. Sitting next to you was what I presume was a father, but it also looked like he had a young son looking on, and he appeared to be about 10 to 12 years old. He seemed to be pretty fascinated when you were getting your haircut.
Oh boy, that's a long time ago, Ben. I'd have to watch again to actually remember what was going on in there for sure.
Oh, okay. Well, now at the 4-minute and 20-second mark, you told the woman to be careful of the star that you had engraved near your eye. Don't mess with the star. That was funny.
That's pretty funny. Yeah. Wow, awesome memories, man. That's wow.
Well,
definitely some
in that video at the 5-minute and 55-second mark, while the lady was doing that clipper cut, you had a message for Diamond Tim Flowers. Do you remember what you said to Diamond Tim Flowers?
I have no idea.
Okay.
What did I say?
You basically said that he better watch his step at Chilliwack, and you predicted a victory in Chilliwack.
Nice. That's awesome.
Okay. All right. Well, Mr. Starr, entrance music has been a theme of this show, and entrance music is pretty much standard in pretty much all matches now. When did you first start using entrance music, or did you ever?
Yeah, I think when I got here to Canada, I started using entrance music. I started using a Dude Looks Like a Lady, and then I switched to Glamour Boy, and then I switched to Barbie Girl in Japan, and then I switched to, what's the last one? I Touched Myself by the Vinyls.
Oh.
Always, I think ring music is very important, especially like I like to dance when I go to the ring, or like gyrate, or you know, give guys lap dances to, you know, to different fans. So it's always, music's definitely involved in my act for sure.
Oh wow, okay. You said you had the song Barbie Girl in Japan.
That's right. Yeah, I used that in Japan there because I was a babyface in Japan. The gay character was actually a babyface there in that company I was working for. I was working for IWA Japan. So, I was kind of got the crowd going and stuff, you know, and the fans liked it, you know. So, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. I could see that going over well in Japan nowadays, because there is a social movement called the Herbivore Man in Japan. Have you heard of this social movement called the Herbivore Man?
No. No, what is it?
Basically... In the course of 60s, 70s, and 80s, the Japanese men would work real long hours for the corporation, and they would often 14 to 16 hour days were the norm, and they'd also go in on the weekends. And to have yourself established with certain corporations gave you the status. What corporation you work for gave you certain status. And men would often work themselves almost into a stupor, and then they'd go out drinking afterwards in late-night bars. Well, that all started to change recently when in a social movement now where men, especially young men, don't want to get involved with the corporations. They want part-time work, and they're into video games, and they're not into relationships at all, and a lot of these herbivore men say they're never going to get married, ever.
Oh, very strange.
It's a huge shift in Japan, yes.
Wow. Definitely something.
It's a cultural shift.
Yeah,
you can look it up on YouTube.
Well, how did you find out about this? Is something
I heard about the falling birth rates in Japan, the plummeting birth rates.
Oh.
And there is a movement on called the Herbivore Man, where they don't want the traditional Japanese marriages, because even in Japan, a lot of women will take the men's money in old age, leaving the man with nothing.
Right.
And they've seen some American movies about, like in the 90s, about American slackers and the slacker culture.
Yeah.
And they've also seen some movie about men getting in America, getting worked over in the divorce courts.
Right. Oh, wow.
But anyway, in a long way, that kind of I was interested on how the women in Japan and how your entrance music was in Japan in a roundabout way.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Now I know about the herbivore man in Japan. Okay, very good.
Herbivore, yeah, you can look that up. But it's kind of like the MGTOW man in America, men going their own way. MGTOW.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Yes.
Well, no, guys, we've got a few minutes left on the show, and Mr. Starr, I want to make sure you have ample time. If there's anything that you want to say to our listeners, plug and promote, anything and everything you want, how to get merchandise, social medias, any upcoming appearances you might be aware of, your favorite dry cleaner, anything you want, floor is all yours.
Yeah, well, you can follow me on Twitter at GM Starr. You can check out allstarwrestling.ca online. You can follow me on Facebook, it's Michelle Starr. Follow our wrestling company, All Star Wrestling, at facebook.com/ASW Canada. We don't have any events right now, but we do have merchandise. We have T-shirts available, snapback hats, COVID masks, you know, face masks. We have yearbooks, coloring books, all kinds of stuff available. Just shoot us a message through our website. We'll get something out to you. We hope to run shows again in the fall, but it's all up to the government here. Right now, we're not allowed any events whatsoever. We're only allowed to have 10 people outside at a time in a social distance type event. So there's no wrestling scene in British Columbia whatsoever at this point. Check us out on YouTube, All Star Wrestling. Support local wrestling when it's about. If you live in a town that has wrestling coming to your town, go out there, buy a ticket, support it. You know, and even if you can't attend the event, buy a ticket, you know, because that money goes to pay the wrestlers, pay the expenses, to keep the small, like, carnival-type wrestling thing going. It's good support, local entertainment. These guys go out and work hard for very little money because the money's just not there. And go out there and give them some support for sure. Stay safe. Stay 6 feet apart. Wear your mask. Get your vaccinations. And, that's about it.
Well, gorgeous Michelle Starr, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on Turnbuckle Turmoil. It took us a while, but we definitely loved having you on here. Always welcome back, and I will keep my eyes peeled for when All Star Wrestling returns.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Thanks, QT, for asking those strange questions that I had no idea what the answers were, but I appreciate it.
All right, well, thank you very much. And before you go, I wanted to pass along a message from Stuart Kemp. He sends his very best and said to tell you hello.
Yeah, Stuart Kemp's a good guy. He's been involved in local wrestling, helping out where it's up here in BC or down there in Oregon and Washington. He's gone through quite a lot of medical situations lately with seizures and stuff like that. And he needs a bit of help. If you go check out his page, check him out on Facebook. Stuart Kemp, he's got a little like a GoFundMe. I don't know if he's a GoFundMe, if he's a Facebook FundMe thing, trying to pay for some medical bills. So look him up. He deserves all the help he could get, for sure.
Absolutely. So definitely, fans, go check out Stuart Kemp's social media, get some details on how you can donate. His Pro Wrestling Tee store on the verge of having a great T-shirt available to purchase that benefits him to offset the medical costs.
Oh, nice.
And fans, definitely, once wrestling opens up in BC, go check out All Star Wrestling. They run a great promotion. You've heard us mention them hundreds upon hundreds of times on this program, so definitely check them out. Gorgeous Michelle Starr is a very, very entertaining sports entertainer, so get on the YouTube, watch some of his footage. There's a ton of it up there. I think you'll definitely enjoy it if you're not familiar, and I'm pretty sure most of our listeners are, but definitely get out there and check it out. We'll be back with you next week. A week from today, we will have War King with the Pennant Wrestler, and he'll be here, so make sure you have plans to be with us. Stay safe. Go support your local independents if you have them near you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Once a minute, Glenn.